Hare Krishna. Today is the 50th anniversary, August 13th, of Srila Prabhupada's departure from Calcutta. So I'm going to read the last section of Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 1. It's a historical account of our real birth. Everyone in the Krishna consciousness movement was, in one sense, conceived at this momentous time when Srila Prabhupada really left. He arrived in Calcutta about 2 weeks before the Jaladuta's departure. Although he had lived much of his life in the city, he now had nowhere to stay. It was, as he had written in his Vrindavan Bhajan, "I have my wife, sons, daughters, grandsons, everything, but I have no money. They are fruitless glory." Although in the city he had been so carefully nurtured as a child, those early days were also gone forever. Where have my loving father and mother gone now? And where are my elders, who were my own folk? Who will give me news of them? Tell me who. All that is left of this family life is a list of names. Out of the hundreds of people in Calcutta whom Bhaktivedanta Swami knew, he chose to call on Mr. Shishir Bhattacharya, the flamboyant kirtan singer he had met a year before at the governor's house in Lucknow. Mr. Bhattacharya was not a relative, not a disciple, nor even a close friend, but he was willing to help. Bhaktivedanta Swami called at his place and informed him that he would be leaving on a cargo ship in a few days. He needed a place to stay, and he would like to give some lectures. Mr. Bhattacharya immediately began to arrange a few private meetings at friends' homes where he would sing, and Bhaktivedanta Swami would then speak. Mr. Bhattacharya thought the sadhus leaving for America should make an important news story. He accompanied Bhaktivedanta Swami to all newspapers in Calcutta, the Hindustan, Standard, the Amrita Bazaar, Patrika, the Yugantas, the Statesman, and others. Bhaktivedanta Swami had only one photograph, a passport photo, and they made a few copies for the newspapers. Mr. Bhattacharya would try to explain what the Swami was going to do, and the news writers would listen. But none of them wrote anything. Finally, they visited the Dainik Bashumati, a local Bengali daily, which agreed to print a small article with Bhaktivedanta Swami's picture. A week before his departure, on August 6, Bhaktivedanta Swami traveled to nearby Mayapur to visit the Samadhi of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Then he returned to Calcutta, where Mr. Bhattacharya continued to assist him with his final business and speaking engagements. Mr. Bhattacharya: "We just took a hired taxi to this place and that place, and he would go for preaching. I never talked to him during the preaching, but once when I was coming back from the preaching, I said, 'You said this thing about this, but I tell you it is not this, it is this.' I crossed him in something or argued, and he was furious. Whenever we argued, I said, 'No, I think this is this.' Then he was shouting. He was very furious. He said, 'You're always saying, I think, I think, I think. What is the importance of what you think? Everything is what you think, but that doesn't matter. It matters what Shastra says. You must follow.' I said, 'I must do what I think, what I feel. That is important.' He said, 'No, you should forget this. You should forget your desire. You should change your habits. Better you depend on Shastra. You follow what Shastra wants you to do and do it. I'm not telling you what I think, but I'm repeating what Shastra says.' As the day of his departure approached, Bhaktivedanta Swami took stock of his meager possessions. He had only a suitcase, an umbrella, and a supply of dry cereal. He did not know what he would find to eat in America. Perhaps there would be only meat. If so, he was prepared to live on boiled potatoes and the cereal. His main baggage, several trunks of his books, was being handled separately by Scindia cargo, 200 three-volume sets. The very thought of the books gave him confidence. When the day came for him to leave, he needed that confidence. He was making a momentous break with his previous life, and he was dangerously old and not in strong health, and he was going to an unknown and probably unwelcoming country. To be poor and unknown in India was one thing. Even in these Kali Yuga days, when India's leaders were rejecting Vedic culture and imitating the West, it was still India. It was still the remains of Vedic civilization. He had been able to see millionaires, governors, the prime minister, simply by showing up at their door and waiting. A sannyasi was respected. Srimad Bhagavatam was respected. But in America, it would be different. He would be no one, a foreigner. And there was no tradition of sadhus, no temples, no free ashrams. But when he thought of the books he was bringing, transcendental knowledge in English, he became confident. When he met someone in America, he would give him a flyer, Srimad Bhagavatam, India's message of peace and goodwill. It was August 13th, just a few days before Janmashtami, the appearance day anniversary of Lord Krishna. The next day would be his own 69th birthday. During these last years, he had been in Vrindavan for Janmashtami. Many Vrindavan residents would never leave there. They were old and at peace in Vrindavan. Bhaktivedanta Swami was also concerned that he might die away from Vrindavan. That was why all the Vaishnav sadhus and widows had taken vows not to leave, even for Mathura, because to die in Vrindavan was the perfection of life. And the Hindu tradition was that a sannyasi should not cross the ocean and go to the land of the Malechas. But beyond all that was the desire of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and his desire was non-different from that of Lord Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had predicted that the chanting of Hare Krishna would be known in every town and village of the world. Bhaktivedanta Swami took a taxi down to the Calcutta port. A few friends and admirers, along with his son Vrindavan, accompanied him. He writes in his diary, "Today at 9 a.m., embarked on MV Jaladuta, came with me Bhagwati, the Dwarwan of Sindhya, Sanchir, Mr. Sengupta, Mr. Ali, and Vrindavan." He was carrying a Bengali copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita, which he intended to read during the crossing. Somehow he would be able to cook on board. Or if not, he could starve, whatever Krishna desired. He checked his essentials, passenger ticket, passport, visa, P-form, sponsor's address. Finally, it was happening. Srila Prabhupada. "With what great difficulty I got out of the country, some way or other, by Krishna's grace, I got out so I could spread Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. Otherwise, to remain in India, it was not possible. I wanted to start a movement in India, but I was not at all encouraged." The black cargo ship, small and weathered, was moored at dockside, a gangway leading from the dock to the ship's deck. Indian merchant sailors curiously eyed the elderly saffron-dressed sadhu as he spoke last words to his companions, and then left them and walked determinedly toward the boat. For thousands of years, Krishna Bhakti had been known only in India, not outside, except in twisted, faithless reports by foreigners. And the only Swamis to have reached America had been non-devotees, Mayavadi impersonalists. But now, Krishna was sending Bhaktivedanta Swami as his emissary. Hare Krishna. I was looking for the conclusion of the first edition, which had, aside from having different information, it had a slightly different ending, and in which the Shishir Bhattacharya was quoted as saying that, anyway, the last part that's always in my mind is, "I didn't know how important a thing it would be." Hare Krishna.